Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. And then there were two races remaining before we'll know the field of 16 that'll have a chance to race for a cup championship through the 10-race playoff. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by racing analyst and my esteemed colleague, Chris Wormy. A busy show on tap today, and for those folks new to the Stay Green podcast, stage one, it's all about recapping everything that we saw on track last weekend. Stage two, we'll start to discuss a lot of the gambling principles you can move going forward, and a little bit of a unique spin for us as we had a chance to be trackside for that great race at Richmond last weekend. And last but certainly not least, in stage three, a comprehensive preview of the drivers to watch for all things Watkins Glen this weekend. And Worm, got to see it in the flesh, man. It had been a while, a great experience, and I don't have enough positive things to say about the experience that NASCAR treated us to, Brian Murphy from SHR, and meeting one of your closest colleagues in Derek Yoder trackside as well.
Yeah, it was an awesome weekend. I think the access that we had and how friendly and welcoming the NASCAR garage is truly something that everyone should go check out. I mean, I know that maybe pit passes are hard to get or they're more expensive, but you have to go check it out, especially if you're a race fan. I mean, they literally take you behind the ropes and you're able to see everything. It was a great experience for everyone. Well, at least for me it was. I won't speak for everybody.
And I mean, even for NASCAR, if you're not even a racing fan, if you do have the opportunity to get some of that VIP access, encourage folks to go there. I think it'll change your thought process on a sport where the casual observer may go, hey, look, NASCAR is just about making left turns. It's a lot more than that. It's about sponsorships. It's about relationships. And we were able to have that privilege to see things up close and personal. But we'll get to that race experience in stage two. Let's start at the top of the show. Almost Groundhog Day, deja vu, call it what you will. For the second time in 8 days, Kevin Harvick finds a way to grab the checkered flag. He becomes the first driver in the new next-gen car to win races in back-to-back weeks. His first win at Richmond since 2013. Pretty incredible for the Ford, who said he actually missed a shift in the final lap as well, allowing Christopher Bell to almost get to his bumper. And some of the comments that Harvick shared in the wake of that back-to-back victory said, as the track got darker, the car started to come to him, and like a broken record, we've talked about the improvements that the Ford makes throughout the course of a race. He was lousy in stage one, but he had a hot rod when it mattered most.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you how sensitive these cars are to changing track conditions. I mean, he was pedestrian at best in stage one, and man, there was no question who the fastest car was as the cloud cover kind of came. So just kind of a true example of just how sensitive these cars are to changing track conditions. And especially, later in the day as the sun's going down as well.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly thrilled with the changing track conditions given a pretty hefty investment on a driver that seemed to fall back. Fortunately, was able to help us cash our featured best bet that, as always, we share on the Bet the Board podcast website, available on Sunday mornings. And it's even more reason that folks should be following Bet the Board Pod at Bet the Board Pod on Twitter, following Chris there as well at Chris Wormy, CHRISWERME15. And you can follow me there as we tweet that out. And we've seen some major market movement with a lot of those matchups. And I know you put together a very profitable race card. You spend an inordinate amount of time. And I think that was eye-opening to me as much as anything else, watching you buy and sell live trading the race for the better part of 3.5 hours from trackside to the restaurant and everywhere else that we took in the 400 lap endeavor at Richmond. But I think the biggest question I want to ask you is about the overall quality of racing. Richmond has come under a lot of scrutiny. We saw the truck race on Saturday night. There wasn't a single pass for the lead under green flag conditions. positions other than off a restart. And even in the spring, the Richmond race was won late on strategy by Denny Hamlin. I think you have to be a little bit more optimistic if Richmond can provide the kind of fireworks that we saw this past Sunday.
Well, I think we need to see higher temperatures. The track widened out massively and almost right away. You know, I was really concerned. We were watching practice, and I thought that maybe we're going to see kind of the same, you know, kind of conveyor belt type race where it was really, really hard to get underneath someone and make a pass. Well, you didn't even have to get underneath them this week. You could just drive right around the outside. And I thought it was a lot of fun. I know that, you know, kind of watching the race from inside the pit area to see, you know, cars entering turn one high and then obviously staying throughout the entire length of the corner up high was almost like watching a mini homestead.
Hey, you love to see multi-groove racing, and unfortunately this isn't NASCAR calling, so I apologize for some of the background noise that our listeners will pick up. But you look at the way drivers go out there, and it wasn't just the elite cars. I mean, for a stretch, you and I kind of looked at each other, and we're watching the 42 pass what we thought were going to be very good cars, and it almost threw me for a complete loop in terms of trying to assess the field. But anytime you can pass on the inside, as we've typically grown accustomed to at Richmond, this was a little bit of an anomaly on the outside, and I think it created a lot more fireworks, so much so that when lap traffic got involved, you saw the field get shuffled up, you saw Kevin Harvick start to come under a bit of duress from Chris Buescher, and you even saw Christopher Bell have a chance to maybe pull out one of the more improbable victories of the season. And I think that provides, you know, almost a seamless segue to talk about Christopher Bell, who in my opinion, and you highlighted this a couple weeks ago, is quickly becoming arguably the most consistent a reliable driver of the quartet we see from JGR on the track each weekend, rallied from being a lap down when the 1 and 18 had a bit of a minor dust up. And when you listen to Christopher Bell's comments in the wake of that performance, talked about the pit crew putting together blazing stops. It allowed them to get in front of Denny Hamlin, who was on a very similar strategy. And it's short tracks, it's flat tracks, it's all the combination of elements where we're going to start to see Christopher Bell priced as a favorite when we return to some of these venues in 2023. And beyond.
Well, there's a good chance for sure. You know, by the way, did you just graze over the fact you still have a house phone? Like, I haven't heard one of those ring in a long time.
You know, it's a de facto bat line. This is kind of what you have to do. And every now and again, when you do major media obligations, you can't trust a cell phone reception out there. You should know this, living out in the boonies in Western Canada, that you can't even use a regular phone call when we try and have normal, productive discussions. It's FaceTime audio. So, you know, those of us who live in glass houses should not be hurling stones. Back to Christopher Bell, all right?
Okay, fair enough. Okay, Chris Bell. Yeah, Chris Bell, it was funny because I went back and rewatched the race. You know, you can only take in so much while you're at the track. You know, you kind of have the storylines that you're following, which are usually our matchups, and we had one outright. But it's really hard to pay attention to everything that's going on. So when I went back and watched the race, it's almost like Chris Bell goes through three or four different phases every race. He started off running the high line, and he was a rocket. But wore his tires off. When you're running that high line, you're definitely not saving any of your stuff for later in the runs. And then he fell off like a dump truck and was getting passed left and right, just waiting for a caution. And then, you know, he spins himself out. He has a penalty. And then somehow finds himself still in the lead lap during the final stage. And all of a sudden, he just figures it out. And this isn't anything new for Chris Bell. This is every single race this kid is doing it. I think he has the most upside week in and week out. However, he also has the downside. He makes a ton of mistakes, but he's just so talented right now. He's able to get it done, and he's always going to be there. If he's got you know, a top 10 car, I feel like he can kind of horse it up there to the top three and maybe even pull out a win. He's just like a high beta Kevin Harvick, where Kevin Harvick's super methodical and Chris Bell is more like a firecracker. Like, he goes really fast and then he explodes and he comes down, but he keeps doing that all race. And I think we could see this kid win a lot of races in the future.
Well, I think when you talk about mistakes, obviously that comes with maturity, more time he spends in the seat. He's still relatively new to the Cup Series, and as he continues to clean up his rides each and every week, to your point, the talent remains unsurpassed even by some of the younger drivers, and this kid will be a force, to say the least, putting that 20 in contention more often than not. You mentioned comers and goers as the race went, and Joey Logano drove himself up through the field after an improbably poor qualifying run, but at the same time, as track conditions change, the hot, slick environment that allows allowed the 22 to race to the field and take the lead early on in stage two were the same traits that had him falling back when things cooled down. And the 22, in my opinion, had a race-winning car, finishes outside the top five, but was open and honest with his assessment for how the run went for him on Sunday.
Of course. I mean, this was, it was fun being at the race, and we didn't have a lot of investments on this race per se, just because we did think it was going to be very difficult to pass. And I just remember, you know, kind of looking over at you early on, and it's like, wow, Logano's up four spots. I didn't think that that would happen in the first run. You know, we made the bet on Logano to win the race. We thought that this was going to be, you know, if he could get with 50 laps to go, you know, kind of in the top five, we get a restart, he could have a chance to win this race. I did not think by like lap 75 he would be leading. I mean, it was, we could actually watch him pass cars almost every single lap. And some of those restarts when he was out restarting on the outside, I mean, he was passing four and five cars a lap. And he just had a ton of grip up there. And it was clear that no one else had that type of grip. And he took advantage of it. And he did have, you know, the talent to go up there and actually make it stick when a lot of guys on a restart wouldn't be willing to do that. So it was fun to watch him lead a lot of laps. It was a bummer that the cloud cover came and we weren't able to cash the ticket. But still, it was nice to know that we had the reads right. That's the important thing. We want to make sure that we, you know, are looking at the right things. And I think this week we did. We just missed it a little bit with Harvick before the race.
There's no doubt. And I think that's one of the more important lessons, as we always try and highlight. You've made good bets over the course of the long haul. You're going to obviously be subjected to in-race variance. And if you continue to put tickets in on cars that are priced at 20 to 1 or 25 to 1, you ain't going to win 20 out of 20. You ain't going to win 4 out of 5. But if you put yourself where you need to be, you'll find yourself in victory lane more often than not. And unfortunately, Logano had a good car, just wasn't good enough to be race winning. And what's going to sound like a broken record yet again, talking about the 11 having a race winning machine but being unable to complete the endeavor, the king of self-destructing this time was a poor pit stop about 13 and a half seconds that have had him cycle through the field out behind his teammates. Obviously, Denny, he's been pretty positive. He knows he's going to have a chance to win that elusive cup championship, in my opinion, if they can clean this up, because they're bringing fast race cars to the track every single week. What I did find interesting more than anything else, the 11 has become arguably the most entertaining follow in the entire NASCAR community, but it wasn't Denny getting involved in a Twitter war this week. It was his crew chief, Chris Gabehart, coming after Jim Utter, who took shots at criticizing their approach on pit road. But if things had gone smoothly, you could have made the case that the 11 would have swept the season series at Richmond.
Yeah, what did he say? Something like, that's why you get to tweet and I get, or I get to make the calls and you get to tweet about it. Yeah, I love that. Listen, here's the deal. The 11's fast every week. So, it, you know, penalties or not, he better be on every team's radar as, you know, from a speed perspective, I think you have to say he's the fastest and the favorite for the chase. However, or the playoffs or the championship, whatever you call it. I'm used to calling it the chase, but they're fast every week. Now, then you look at the opposite, the team like the 9, where they're just executing at a super high level. They're getting finishes. You know, Denny's probably the fastest car, arguably week in and week out. He's just not getting that win, but he's still finishing great. So, you know, he wins this race on a normal pit stop. I mean, you know, I think that if you know, if the start finish line was on the back stretch, Chris Bell wins. So the fact that Denny, you know, had that extra 2 seconds on his stop, I think he wins this race. He probably makes the pass in dramatic fashion with like two or three to go, and he wins. And you know what? Here's the thing is we were at a restaurant watching that. We didn't have the sound on, and I had no idea that that's what happened. I thought that, I mean, I noticed that Chris Bell actually had, you know, passed him on pit road, but I didn't know why. You know, we weren't listening. But you know what? They had to rejack the car and get that wheel on, because here's the deal. If they leave and that wheel falls off, he gets a, you know, whatever, a 28th place finish, and he also loses his crew chief. So, you know, it's really, really hard to sit there and say, you know what, they got it wrong. You know, it was the wrong call, or they didn't win the race, but they kind of saved the race by actually not having Denny take off on the jack. They had a great signal. He stayed, they got the wheel tight, and then they took off and they got the finish that they needed. So as bad as it is, that actually, I think, was a sign of kind of a race winning decision not leaving on the jack.
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, they averted what could have been an outright disaster there. So communication clearly improving. We talk all the time that you don't want to be peaking until the stakes are at their highest, and you can't put a price on race winning speed on a weekly basis. The 11 has clearly had that. If they're able to tighten up some of the decision making that Denny has made along pit road, along with the crew chief, there is no doubt that we're going to be talking about the 11 as a car to watch as we get deeper into the playoff race. And knowing what he's capable of doing at some of the tracks where he's had a lot of success in the past. Had a number of other drivers in some of my notes. I don't want to get bogged down too much because I know we're going to hit on a lot of these guys when we talk about drivers to pay attention to this week at Watkins Glen. But I feel like we have to revisit at least Ross Chastain in some capacity because it's another week. It's another week where Ross Chastain is fast, just missed out on his first career pole in the Cup Series. But yet again, the one car making enemies on the track.
Yeah, I mean, typical. I mean, I don't know what else to say other than like, well, just throw another driver on there that's unhappy with Ross Chastain. And I just don't think you can win the chase having that many guys not wanting you to win the chase. So, you know, the one thing I did have noted on Chris Buescher here, who, what a great run by that 17 team. I think I yelled at the bar because I had live bet Truex at that point and I did not have Chris Buescher, and sure enough, old Kevin Harvick comes racing up on Brad Keselowski to put him a lap down or another lap down, and it was a Newman like lap down block that old Brad put on Kevin Harvick to allow that 17 car to get right up to Harvick. And man, I was so mad. But it's weird. We haven't, not having Newman in the field, which is a typical impossible guy to pass when you're a lap down. We did see glimpses of it with the 17's boss trying to get Chris's first win.
Hey, I mean, Brad was doing everything he could. Remember, he's not just a full-time driver these days. He's part owner of the team. So he's clearly going to reap the benefits if he can get the 17 into the postseason, since it doesn't appear that his first go around in the six is going to yield those kind of results. So it's always funny to watch some of the cat and mouse game that goes on, and that's why we love the sport, with some of the storylines and subterfuge that goes on with these guys trying to figure out who will be the 16 that have a chance to win a championship. We could obviously hit on Martin Truex and some of his disappointment, but I know he's going to be a focal point when we start to look at Watkins Glen. I guess last but not least, we have to talk about the hard racing, for lack of a better term, we saw within the Toyota stable. Ty Gibbs, a likely replacement in the 18 car for Kyle Busch, and of course Kyle does finish inside the top 10, but it wasn't without a little bit of drama as those two were trading paint for an extended stretch.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. You know, it was something we didn't catch while we were at the race, but certainly rewatching it was funny. It's almost like he's almost like Brexton Gibbs. Like, it was almost like a little, like the way Kyle Busch would have reacted, like a young Kyle Busch, you know, with, you know, and here's the thing. I thought Kyle was in the right. I thought that this was Ty, you know, coming across a little immature. The first time that the 18 got it on the 45, I mean, the 18 was there and Ty didn't realize it. And, you know, that he slides up the track and Kyle gets a spot, and then just driving down the backstretch, Gibbs just doesn't lift and just plows into Kyle and then takes a spot back. And I kind of chuckled to myself. I'm really glad that that's how it ended, because, man, that's a little irresponsible. That is Ty Gibbs being Ty Gibbs. But it also kind of reminded me of, you know, a Kyle Busch maybe at that 18, 19 years old. So just kind of funny that Gibbs is kind of reminding, you know, Kyle who pays the bills for that 18 team.
Oh, it's going to be funny to watch. And I think on some level, to kind of ease the stress and or off track distractions for the 18, they should just make an announcement. Either you have a deal in place for 2023 and beyond, or you're going to part ways, because I'm not sure you can let this linger. It doesn't do a service to the race team that obviously wants to win a championship, and a driver that clearly would love to win yet another one. But of course, we don't get paid to speculate on some of those things that don't impact the betting markets. It's just fun to watch, mainly as a NASCAR fan. We'll wave the green white checkered flag and close the book on stage one. Want to remind all of you to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. And Worm, as we shift our focus to stage two, I think it's important to start with, obviously, some handicapping concepts like we always do before we get into our race day experience that I think will be important to chronicle for a lot of the recreational fans that are out there wondering what goes on behind the scenes on race day. And when we get to road courses, I know we're going to sound like a broken record talking about drivers that are on the bubble and some that could race for points. Others will be racing for the win. How do you see some of the different strategies potentially playing out, not only here at Watkins Glen as a road course, but being very different than what we saw unfold at the 3/4 mile track last weekend at Richmond?
Yeah, the strategy is completely different, and where the risks are completely different. So I want to talk about the strategy risks that are different here at a road course versus Richmond. You know, it's almost their exact opposite. If you pitted at Richmond, you pitted early, let's say, you don't want to caution because you went a lap down, maybe two laps down. You want to be able to make sure that the pit cycles all the way through, so that way you get the advantage of the front end of those faster tires. It's the complete opposite at Watkins Glen, where you won't go down a lap. Once you pit and you get your service, you want the caution to come out, because now all those guys that had stayed out are going to have to pit, and then you're going to inherit that track position. So it's definitely the opposite here. If you're staying out at Richmond, you want a caution. If you're staying out at Watkins Glen, you certainly don't want a caution. So it's the exact opposite. Now, when it comes to racing for points, it's kind of interesting because I think it's very driver dependent and track dependent. I do not think Ryan Blaney is going to be as aggressive with his race winning strategy, I guess if you call it that, as Martin Truex would be. Martin Truex is a great road course racer. And I think if Martin Truex is a top three car, I think he'll throw points out the window. He's already 26 points back. It's going to be hard, especially with the Blaney almost points racing through his rear view mirror. I mean, I imagine that he's going to make a lot of decisions based on what the 19 does. And so if he can get some free points, he's going to do it, because Blaney's not great at road courses. If Martin Truex Jr. has a top three car, he will take the most aggressive strategy to win the race. That's the easiest way for him to get into the playoffs. So very different between the drivers, and I think that the strategy will come down to whether Truex is a race-winning car or not. If he doesn't, he's going to have to just take what the car will give him. They can maybe be selectively aggressive, but they need to unload fast. And if they do that, I think you'll see Truex. I don't think he'll try to stay up for points. I think he's going to try to win the race. Now, we did see Blaney stay out at Indy with really old tires. Not only did he get points, he was able to stay out and still fit his two-stop window to the rest of the race. So I think you could see some of that. We saw that last year at Watkins Glen, so I would expect to see that again this week. So, you know, when it comes to racing for points and, you know, racing for the win, I think you'll see the 19 go for the race win, and I think you'll see Blaney be a little bit more conservative with points and maybe build on that lead as they head into the wild card at Daytona.
I think it's worth discussing, too, because we talk all the time about the importance in reading, whether you're handicapping NASCAR or any other sport, trying to give yourself a little bit of an edge against the bookmaker that's required to set odds on a variety of head-to-head matchups, outrights, and what have you. And we saw going into Indy, and even before that at Road America, Chase Briscoe kind of tipped his hand and said, hey, we're going to be out here racing for points. We're not as concerned about getting a race win. And I think Steve Letarte said something that was pretty relevant earlier this week on NBCSports.com, talking about if he's Ryan Blaney's crew chief, he's going to figure early on what kind of car Martin Truex Jr. has. And to your point, if Truex Jr. has a car capable of winning the race, Blaney's got to go out there and be aggressive and look to secure his passage to the postseason. The only way he can do that with a guaranteed seat at the table is with his own victory. If they realize that Martin Truex Jr. doesn't have a car that they think can win the race, then you basically race this entire thing at Watkins Glen with Martin Truex Jr. in your rear view mirror. Try and figure out how you can gain points. But what I found even more fascinating in Letarte's comments, he said, you know what, that's the only driver we can worry about. If somebody else that doesn't already have a win wins and steals a seat, well, that's something that's beyond our control. And it got me thinking, obviously, one of the sharpest guys out there who spent time atop the box and work with some of the best drivers is saying that. You have to imagine that's going to infiltrate some of the discussion that's going on this week around Team Penske and the 12 cars motivation for how they need to approach the Go Bowling 250.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. We don't know. There's so many unknowns. If you want to speculate this early in the week, then you can. Hopefully you're right. But I don't think that there's a good explanation until we see these cars unload and we see where the cautions fall and just how good the cars are, to be honest. I mean, that's a big part of this this strategy will be who's got a race winning car. And if neither of them do, I think you'll see Blaney be super conservative and just try to keep Truex behind him.
One other thing I want to ask about the Glen this weekend, and if you're factoring it in, when you're looking to try and build a race card, we know that Mother Nature can oftentimes play a role in central New York. The forecast earlier in the week looked to be a lot more ominous on race day. Things appear to be clearing out a little bit. How much emphasis will you place on the potential for rain throwing a wrench in? We know that rain and muddy conditions are a great equalizer in football season. Rain can be a great equalizer when it comes to road course racing as well.
Well, I think, you know, I don't want to take a big position on anything at this point in the week. I think that would be a little irresponsible from a betting perspective. So, you know, I think you can certainly take your shots at value, but I would definitely kind of hold off on any drastic or major positions until race day. You know, when it comes to rain, I mean, does that bring like... Well, we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about this driver later.
Yeah, I think it could bring a number of drivers very much into the mix if they want to go out there and take a slightly cautious approach. But I like the tease. We will, of course, get there, but want to share a little bit of our race day experience and the opportunities we had at Richmond. Again, thanks to the generosity of NASCAR, who are a proud presenting sponsor of the Stay Green podcast. But Stuart Haas Racing, specifically Brian Murphy, you know, opened his arms and welcomed us into their racing fraternity. Talked to us openly and honestly about some of the things that go into putting cars together for race weekend, took us into the hauler, allowed us to ask questions of Johnny Klossmeyer about what goes in. And what I found interesting, Worm, when we were doing all of that, I think they went in with the expectation we were going to lob softballs their way and ask more general NASCAR terms, not specifics about tire fall off, how the sims work, how the aero does, how manufacturers all play in. So in my opinion, that might have been the most beneficial discussion that we had with anybody all weekend long, kind of getting a chance to peel back the curtain and speak to a lot of the difference makers that put these cars together and develop race strategies on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I think we deserve a trophy for the questions that we were asking Klossmeyer. I mean, I think that, you know, we should be invited back every week to maybe ask them the hard-hitting questions that maybe they're not thinking about. I was just shocked at, you know, Brian had definitely reached out and has been, you know, so gracious to give us access at the track. And I felt bad. I mean, these guys are preparing for big races. And, you know, he's taking us in the hauler and then he takes us into the office to talk to Klossmeyer. And I'm like, hey, you don't have to do this. He goes, no, this is NASCAR. And I think it's just a credit to these teams and some of the things that they deal with on race day. I mean, he sat down and talked to us for 10 minutes and he allowed us to ask questions. And yeah, the question wasn't how long does a pit stop take, you know? And so we were definitely interested in some of the details, the minutia of what makes a fast race car and how to kind of adjust on the fly. And I can't be more thankful, you know, to everyone that hosted us. It was a great experience for sure.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you hit on a key point talking about NASCAR and their ability to create access, not only from the team side, but also NASCAR in general. We had the privilege of going into what's called the 1948 meeting room. So they obviously, the track president offered up some remarks. Chase Young was the honorary starter for the race, or if I'm butchering exactly what his role was, I apologize in advance. But I think what's crazy is the responsibilities that these drivers take that, you know, 60 to 90 minutes before they're about to get in car, some of them racing for their playoff lives, going at, you know, speeds that would send chills down everybody's spine, walking around, shaking hands, kissing babies, putting their faces in front of those folks that they know are so important to the lifeblood of their sport. So just being around it, seeing all of the drivers come in, seeing the different colors of the fire suits, and obviously getting a little bit of a sense for drivers' personalities in terms of who came in, then looked like they wanted to be there. There were plenty of drivers who looked like they'd rather be doing 100,000 other things that'll remain nameless. But I think it was an eye-opening experience for us, even so much so that we had a chance to match wits at least for a few minutes with a racing legend in Jeff Gordon.
Yeah, it was funny. I talked to my dad for a little bit today about just the stuff that had happened. It's been a busy couple days, so we hadn't had a chance to catch up. And he was asking, like, what's the coolest thing that happened? I said, to be honest, to sit on a pit box and watch a four-tire stop after stage one and to see, like, Larson pit directly in the 41 and then to watch the 41 pit right in front of us and to see the two pit right behind there and how fast You know, and it's not like I didn't know it was about to happen, but just to see it and how much this has affected, I don't want to say my life and be dramatic, but you know, my income. I mean, to see what these people do week in and week out at such a high level was really, really cool. And then I said that to my dad, and then it's like, oh yeah. And I got to talk to Jeff Gordon for like 10 or 15 minutes. And, you know, and my dad goes, did you just, oh, by the way, you talked to Jeff Gordon for 10 or 15 minutes? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, yes, I kind of did, because the coolest thing for me was to kind of sit on top of the pit box and watch, you know, kind of the first stage. That was the coolest part. But I don't mean to just, oh, by the way, Jeff Gordon, but I did. And my dad's like, okay, hang on there, hot shot. All right. You can't just glaze over the conversation you had with Jeff Gordon, which actually was about sports betting and the business of NASCAR and how that's going to impact the series moving forward. So Jeff is super involved. And I'll tell you what, I thought he was more of a figurehead, and I don't mean to sound like disingenuous, but that's kind of what I thought. I was wrong. He cares. And it was kind of great to have that interaction. You know, I wanted to bring up a bunch of different times when he cost me money or he made me money, but I didn't. I stayed reserved, and it was just a great experience.
Yeah, there are a time and a place for all that, but I think you can see the fact that a retired driver that has accomplished so much on the track cares so deeply about the sport. Obviously, Jeff made the move going from the booth with Fox to working as part of the competition committee, and I don't have his official job title in front of me for what he's doing with HMS, and I feel fortunate that I had a chance to work with Jeff years ago when he was a member of the Fox family, talking about Daytona, asking him some of the hard-hitting racing questions that were there. So it was good to have a chance to see him again face-to-face. And obviously, to your point, understanding how important sports betting is to NASCAR's development, it creates a different level of fan engagement. And I think NASCAR is trying to figure out, as a league, how they get this relationship to continue to grow and blossom, how it benefits the teams and benefits the drivers. Because I know we use this cliche plenty, and I'm going to use it again here. Rising tides raise all ships, and we're ever so fortunate to have this platform to talk about NASCAR betting, make the Bet the Board audience, specifically in regards to Stay Green, a lot smarter. And it's why we encourage all of you guys to try and interact with us on social, ask questions. We're always here to try and answer those for you. Worm, I gave you the chance last week to read the on-track activities. Do you want to follow it up this week, or do you want to throw the baton back to me? Because I know you almost wilted under the pressure.
No, this looks like a lot. I'm definitely not going to do that. I will say this. I definitely had an ego check when Jeff Gordon kind of acted like he knew you. I was like, oh my gosh, you gotta be. He's like, oh yeah, hey Todd. And I'm like, hey Todd, are you kidding me? Did you just, hey Todd? Anyway, so that was my, get in line, Worm. Like, you're not quite there yet.
You know, sometimes it happens. You keep picking winners at the rate you've done. There'll be plenty of folks that know you, not only in the NASCAR garage, but more importantly, at all of NASCAR-sponsored sports books as well. But all right, when we shift our attention on track activities this week, and they'll get started early in the morning on Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, NASCAR Xfinity Series practice and qualifying at Watkins Glen. That's only actually available on the NBC app. Then at 12 o'clock Eastern, we'll see the Cup drivers hit the track as well. It is worth mentioning for those folks who don't pay attention to some of this other series that you may want to watch the Xfinity race. You'll recognize a lot of the Cup drivers that are out there, and I think it can be extremely competitive at the top of the field. But at noon Eastern, you'll see Cup Series practice and qualifying at Watkins Glen. That's also only available on the NBC app, so we can only keep our fingers crossed that the app will work the way it's supposed to in a nice, seamless manner. And when you're looking at the way everything else will unfold, you know, that'll continue all the way up until about 1:30 Eastern. We'll drop the green flag at 3 Eastern for the Xfinity race. That you can see on USA Network. And of course, like always, on-track activities will culminate on Sunday with the Cup Series, weather permitting, dropping the green flag at 3 Eastern for the Gold Bowling at the Glen from Watkins Glen, available on USA Network. I did leave out one part, though, Worm, of the NASCAR experience. You had a chance to meet not just one member of the racing fraternity and immortality, but you also got to meet a man who you rely on week in, week out for some of the best at-track information that you don't have readily available or accessible if he wasn't so great on the Twitter machine.
Oh, life complete. Bob Pockris and I shook hands, and I got to watch him work his magic at a tweet up. I mean, you want to talk about riveting stuff. It was great. It was everything I'd hoped for and even more. You know, to be honest, I actually really admire this guy. He went out there and he loves NASCAR, and he just kept showing up and he gives a lot of information. I mean, if you don't, there's not one person that's either a diehard NASCAR fan or someone that bets on NASCAR that doesn't rely on Bob Pockrass. He's really, really important, and it was nice to finally meet him and just kind of thank him for everything that he does. And he kind of went about his way. I mean, he just had his one earpiece in, listening to like the probably the MRN or broadcast before the race and some of the driver interviews, and he was running around with his little notebook. I'd like to sponsor that notebook. Actually, it's green.
Yeah, Bob, if you're out there listening, we can always put together a Stay Green sticker and maybe put that on there. Just a thought. We know Bob is a fan of the podcast, so we just had to throw that out there. And if he wants, he can reach out to us. So I like that. I like that sponsorship plug there, Worm.
I'd love that.
So, no, it's great to meet all the personalities. To your point, I mean, it's such a commitment for everybody involved in NASCAR, to those folks in the booth, those folks that report on the sport, the drivers, everybody that's involved with the race day activities. I mean, you're talking about a 36-week race schedule, the longest sports season, other than probably golf, that's out there, and the level of commitment it takes to put together race-winning machines, and more importantly, give us the information that we lean on to try and make informed investments. We're waving the green, white, checkered flag. That's the end of stage two, and it's on to stage three we go with a breakdown of this weekend's race from Watkins Glen. And as always, we start with the track breakdown. A shade under 2.5 miles of a road course, 8 total turns on a traditional asphalt surface. You'll hear the terms S's and inner loop thrown about 100,000 times through the Xfinity race and the Cup. Watkins Glen has hosted a Cup race every year since 1986. During the COVID season was the lone exception there. And we have an absolutely star-studded field. We have the normal usual suspects, those that are racing for a championship on the Cup side. You have AJ Allmendinger, who we know gets involved in every road course when he has the opportunity to drive the 16. But we also have a unique treat for those folks who may have grown up watching F1. They may not be as familiar with the name because he's not racing in the international circuit these days, but Kimi Raikkonen, and he sparked a little bit of a discussion amongst the NASCAR betting community. We've seen a lot of odds movement, and I think it's a good place to start. Maybe not because we think he has a legitimate chance to win the race, but Kimi Raikkonen's numbers have gone from 125-1 down to 50-1 at a lot of sportsbook. He'll be driving the 91 for Trackhouse as part of their program to introduce some big time names into the sport. He'll bring two brand new technology sponsors, including one from his native Finland. That's always great to get some fresh blood in the sport. He has made previous starts in the Xfinity and Truck Series way back in 2011. This will actually be his first ever Cup start. Worm, how do we handicap a driver not familiar with stock car racing, but one who's clearly got a great racing pedigree?
Well, not only does he have a great racing pedigree, he has a fast car. I mean, we're talking about a team that's won 2 road course races this year. So I think that that's more important. Will he have speed, right? It's really tough to take a car that's not that fast and go out and win a race. But we've got that part taken care of. Now, I think the kind of the pressure's on Kimi here. The biggest difference, obviously the weight of the car and where the weight sits in the car, it's a little more top heavy versus, this open wheel with super wide, low to the ground, more aero, I guess, dependent. Here's my take on someone like Kimi. It's either a like crash and burn type day where it's just kind of a throwaway. But if you see him get comfortable and maybe run 1 or 2 fast laps in practice and feel comfortable in the car, and he learns throughout the race, and he doesn't go out and try to, pick up 5 or 6 spots, maybe even the first stage. He just tries to get comfortable. I could see him, having a decent race. I'm not quite sure how I feel about him, running in the top 5. I think I'd actually be shocked at that, because I think running fast lap times and passing cars are 2 very, very different things. So I'm excited, though. I think he'll be kind of the most popular guy in the garage. Like last week, it was kind of funny. We're walking around on, the pit road before the race and, thinking that the drivers are the most popular guy. Well, then Jordan walks by and then you realize, whoa, that is a popular guy, because he got just hounded by people. I think you'll see something similar with Kimi this week. But from a racing perspective, I don't have super high expectations, but I think the reason he was bet down from 125-1 down to 50 is just because of the equipment. I don't think it has anything to do with, him as a driver. I mean, obviously he's a good road course racer, but I think it's the equipment that that kind of gave it that that 75-point drop.
Yeah, and I think books obviously have to try and protect against a long shot like this that we know is accomplished in other series. I'm going to be extremely fascinated to see how he's priced in the head-to-head market and which matchups we actually see widely available from the screen and a lot of the other books as well. The driver that I'm not sure may play a role in grabbing the checkered flag this weekend, but we obviously have to at least mention in passing, is the one who puts his two-race winning streak on the line. That, of course, being Kevin Harvick at 25-1. We know the four is brimming with confidence. He said Watkins Glen is a place that I've been fortunate to win at and have had some success here in the past. And, you know, we just have to get in a good rhythm, try to be prepared from the simulator and the racetrack for that short practice that we have and go straight into qualifying, see where it all goes from there. What kind of expectations do you have for the four this weekend?
Well, I'm not going to say super high. You know, I think that there were some things that happened in these races that went kind of their direction. These races are hard to win. And, you know, Harvick to win at Michigan had a few breaks early on to get Kyle out of the race and then to have Denny have a mistake late. Otherwise, you know, he was a good car, but also, you know, you look back at Richmond, I think he was pretty solid, but if there's no cloud cover, I think that the 22 wins the race. You know, there is an element of luck to win these things. I'm not super high on Harvick at 25-1. I know that, you know, there are a lot of people that are, but I think, you know, Harvick might be better at track, obviously, like Phoenix or somewhere where you need a lot of momentum or high tire wear. So maybe something like Darlington, but I do not expect him to kind of be running in that top five. You know, maybe a top 10 car if he just stays out of trouble. But I think he's probably properly priced at that 25-1.
Man, Harvick will have the luxury here, something we didn't think we were going to talk about a couple of weeks ago, of racing for points if he so chooses to try and improve his overall seeding, as he's got 1 foot already in the playoffs with two races to go in the regular season. Another driver in the same price range as Kevin Harvick would be Martin Truex Jr. And we didn't talk about his run at Richmond because I thought it made more sense to try and focus on it here. Truex won at Watkins Glen back in 2017, but we haven't seen JGR bring a ton of speed for their road program so far. This season, he has led the second most laps here in the last two trips. However, when you talk about the 19 specifically, his average road course finish this year barely better than 17th.
Man, I just want to bet Gibbs so badly, but my explanation would be terrible. It would be, well, I think they're going to be good. That would be why I'd bet anybody for Joe Gibbs. You just haven't seen a reason to fire on these guys at all before practice and qualifying, just because they've been terrible on these road courses so far this year. I would say that, you know, Chris Bell has been the best on these road courses, but he's kind of been the best week in and week out with this team, in my opinion. So, well, obviously, when it comes to having a chance to win the race, like, you know, he won at Loudon, and then, you know, obviously had another half lap he wins this week. So let me take that back. Denny Hamlin has been the best, but I think that Chris Bell has the most upside. And I think you see that in the pricing as well. So I honestly don't know where Gibbs is at. I hope they look good because then there's a ton of value on them. But at this point, I don't know. I wish I knew, but I just don't.
Yeah, and you mentioned the other Gibbs drivers, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, also priced in a very similar window in that 25 range. Of course, if you shop around, you may be able to find better. And of course, you could take worse if you're not doing your homework. Christopher Bell, a shade shorter, haven't seen him priced at 20-1 or better. I'll call 18 more or less the consensus if you're looking to try and make a compelling case for a stable of drivers we know are ultra talented, but and JGR that has underperformed at road courses so far this season. Chris Buescher, Mr. Worm, he's been really good when you have to make left and right turns so far this season. He also tire tested at the racetrack earlier this year. Important to mention that Martin Truex Jr. did as well. Said his team learned from things that they didn't put to practice at COTA. He was outstanding at Sonoma, tremendous at Road America, raced himself back into a very productive finish at Indy despite being three laps down in a car that caught on fire early on. He was pretty insightful in an interview he gave earlier this week talking about how it's been an increased focus for him on the road course, knowing that you're not just running one or two of these every season, and it's a very important segment of what they're looking to do in the Cup Series, and the Ford performance has helped from the manufacturer side as well. Christopher Buescher, widely available at 25-20-1. You can shop around for various prices. Do we think he is going to have a chance to take the 17 to victory lane?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about his name, that's for sure. I think instead of calling him Christopher, let's just call him Topher Buescher. So Topher this week, I really like Topher. This guy, listen.
If this sticks in the NASCAR community, you may have one pissed off Fastenal 17 Ford sneaking into your mentions.
Yeah, so Topher, I like him this week. I like him for a lot of reasons, but you had mentioned earlier that it was interesting for you to see how engaged I am in the race when you're live betting, and you have to be. But when you're doing that, you tend to pick up on some things that maybe other people won't. So when Chris Buescher was a couple laps down at Indianapolis, I was monitoring his lap times. I had a lot on him in a matchup against Ty Gibbs, which just looked terrible all day. And I paid a hefty minus 170 for it, but should have been minus 250 based on speeds. Anyway, neither here nor there. He was a couple laps down. But when he was in clean air, he was running faster times than the leaders that were also in clean air. Once he got his lap back, he was able to drive from from, let's say, 17th to 20th place. He ended up driving inside the top 10, and that's really impressive. Yes, he did have fresher tires, but he still had to get through that turn one and everything that goes into turn one at Indy. So I think that Chris Buescher is going to be a real contender this week. Hopefully he feeds on some of that momentum from last weekend, which is a big deal. Whether you believe in the momentum or not, it might just have this placebo effect where at least he feels like he deserves to be there. And a lot of the times that's all it takes. Look what happened to Tyler Reddick. He goes out there and he should have won a lot of races. He finally wins one. What do? We show up to the next road course and he dominates. So I think that confidence is a big deal, even if it's a placebo effect. I think that the 17 team has speed on road courses and potentially a race winning car this weekend. I love where he's priced. And by the way, by the time this airs, we will have bet him.
So that's a tipping of our hand. It probably won't be our best bet because the number most likely won't be available. If you want to go in with a little pre-week Chris Buescher, we're not going to deter you from doing so. You mentioned Tyler Reddick, and we'll get to the pair of more or less co-favorites in a moment or two, but we would be remiss when we talked about one track house car in the 91 if we ignored what we're going to see this weekend from the 1 in 99. Ross Chastain won at COTA. He's been fast nearly every week. Daniel Suarez got his first career cup victory at Sonoma. What do we think the track house is going to unload this weekend on the road courses where they've been surprisingly stout?
Well, I think that, we had discussed last time, last road course, whether they were properly priced. And I think that they were properly priced at Indy. And I'll say this. I think that right now Suarez is maybe a little overvalued, especially compared to the one. I mean, the 99 has not been nearly as competitive as the one week in and week out. So I definitely give the edge to Chastain there. I think that there's maybe a little bit of a value on him at 12 to 1. He's been very consistent this year in just having speed. And you know what? If someone's going to find a shorter way around the track, whether it's legal or not, I'm pretty sure that the one will find it. So
let's see what creative ways he can go through the bus stop, assuming that's still part of the course that we're racing here. I'm not even sure what the exact configuration is because I know Watkins Glen has tinkered, but there is no doubt there will be an access road that the one will probably clarify if it's legal or not with NASCAR before they drop the green flag on Sunday.
Hey, I started off, pretty harsh on Ross when it happened, but after hearing kind of what went down, I don't blame him. And I don't like seeing him up there and kind of messing with guys because these races are hard to win. So that was my that was why I was upset. But I do think that maybe a little bit of value on the one this week because he's going to be there. I mean, the guy's picked up spots on every single track that he's been on. So I expect more of the same. I have not seen the same out of that Suarez team as of late.
Yeah, and the one actually going through his first rough patch of the season, four straight races where he's finished no better than 18th. We'll see if he can get this thing righted. But when you're talking about race winning speed, the one has been the model of consistency and no doubt should be able to potentially regain his form as early as Watkins Glen. When we're talking about the favorites, you kind of tipped your hand a little bit about Tyler Reddick, more or less 6-1 market consensus on him to win this weekend. But the favorite at a lot of books is Chase Elliott, and rightfully so. And his prices have been all over the place. I've seen him priced as short as sub 4-1 out here in the desert, priced upwards of 5-1 at a majority of shops. And when you look at what the 9 has done, back-to-back finishes outside of the top 10 before he was able to grab 5th at Richmond, yet another enigmatic interview with him where he says he still doesn't know exactly what Richmond does and how he needs to best prepare for it, but we'll worry about that when we return there in 2023. He's been better than an 8th place average finish on road courses this season, 3 top 10s, 16th at Indy when he was shuffled back late. We know anytime we're going to a road course, the 9 has to factor into the equation in some capacity.
Well, here's, I can already tell you how Chase's weekend is going to go. He's going to look average in practice. He's going to qualify better than his car. I would say, yeah, let's just say he qualifies 10th, and he's probably going to ride around 10th most of the day, and with 20 laps to go, he'll be done pitting. Everyone will be done pitting, and then he'll be in second or third place. I don't know how, whether it's not based on speed, but they just execute so well that I just plan on him being there. And I think that that's why you're seeing the short 5-1 price on him as the favorite. And you know what? The guy races well there, so I'm not going to fault him for that. But also the public money that's going to come in on Chase, just because it's Chase and Chase at a road course. So, you know, I think we said last time we kind of expected Chase to be a 5-1 favorite, and then Reddick would be right behind him at 6-1. And that's what we're seeing at this point in the week.
Yeah, and Tyler Reddick, when you look at what he's done, back-to-back wins at road courses, 10th in his only career cup start here. And when you're talking about what his average road course finishes this season, it's outside the top 10. But if we remove Sonoma, it's significantly better than that. There is no doubt that the 8 will look to bounce back after what could best be described as a disappointing performance at Richmond last weekend. Before we get into the portion of the show that I know a lot of our listeners are always on their edge of their seat waiting for as far as our best investment is concerned, week, did want to give you the opportunity if there was another driver you'd like to hit on. I mean, a number of people will probably be asking about what the expectations or thoughts are on AJ Allmendinger this weekend, Austin Cindric, Chase Briscoe, Kyle Larson, but the reality of it is we can't go into every single driver in the field. So of those four, Worm, if you wanted to take one, be more than happy to get your thoughts.
Well, I just think, you know, drivers that are racing the Xfinity Series have a clear advantage. I think that they're one adjustment ahead of guys that don't. So I guess if you want to look at Dinger and Larson, I mean, Dinger's obviously great on road courses. This is no secret. And Kyle Larson's pretty darn good here at Watkins Glen. There's a reason that Larson's in that race, and it's not just for the money. I can promise you that. I think that this guy wants to go out there. Not only is he a competitor, but he wants to learn and maybe get another win here at Watkins Glen. So I look for those guys to be pretty good. But sure enough, I mean, Briscoe raced well last year. Cindric's good week in and week out at every road course. I say week in and week out, but I should just say at every road course. No hard feelings.
Brian, if you're out there listening, no ill will meant by those particular comments. Continue, Worm.
Yeah. I mean, I think Cindric will obviously race well. He's great on road courses, and Briscoe, like I said, has been good here in the past, or at least last year. So I think everyone's kind of properly priced. There might be someone that I'm kind of, you know, maybe underplaying, because I think that there might be some value there maybe later in the week, and I don't want to tip my hand too much. But that's all I really have to say about those guys. I just would look to some of the drivers that are running the Xfinity Series. I do think it's an advantage to run in that series the day before.
And I think we've seen it. I mean, the less seat time that Kyle Busch has had, that's not coincidence. Then you look at a guy who dominated in the trucks, who dominated in the Xfinity, who used to have the benefit of multiple practices, and that one was when he was out there at his absolute best. That increased seat time definitely works in the favor of all of these drivers. It's all about honing your craft and trying to get extra practice. And of course, if you're racing on Saturday, while the car may not be the same on Sunday, knowing exactly how things will work, being able to hit your marks can go a long way in terms of being competitive and making those in-race adjustments. You can follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Stay Green continues to build its listenership each and every week, mainly because we're finding a way to get to the window, not just with some of our best bets that we're offering up on Sundays, but also what we're putting together on the pre-week portion of the program. And as always, Worm, that's where we like to go to wrap things up with investment advice. What have you found for us this weekend?
Oh, my new best friend, Topher Buschert. I like Topher Buschert to finish in the top 10. He's minus 110 to minus 120 at a lot of places. I think you see him contending for this race win. I know that that price opened up at plus 110, and you know, when markets are don't have a lot of liquidity, those things move quite quickly. So I still like it at up to minus 120 or minus 125. And I definitely think you see that 17 car in Topher Buschert racing for the win, or at least close to the win. I think he'll be in the mix.
We will all be fans of the 17 from Central New York on Sunday. I want to remind you guys, the loyal listeners, and I know we've harped on it, be sure to be following all those accounts when we offer up the Sunday matchup best bet. We know those markets move quickly. Obviously, a lot of prices haven't been set. There's not a ton of liquidity out there right now, so it's why we have to wait till a couple hours before on race day to allow everybody to try and have the opportunity to turn this listening experience into one that's profitable at the betting window. Chris, best of luck with all of your investments this weekend. As far as our listeners are concerned, with a top 10 ticket on the Chris Buschert 17 machine on Sunday, hopefully we'll see you at the window.